Hello and welcome to the pod. I'm Nathan Fink.
I'm Jasmine Torres Allen, and this is New Hampshire Family Now,
a show about building family in the Granite State.
Today in the podcast, Jasmine and I talk angry cleaning and what it communicates to our loved ones. And later, Choose Love New Hampshire leader Shannon Deslitz joins us to discuss heroic choices and the happiness quartet that follows.
New Hampshire Family Now is brought to you by the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. Since 1962, the Charitable Foundation has worked hand-in-hand with generous and visionary citizens to maximize the power of giving and support, collaborate, and lead innovative initiatives. Initiatives like New Hampshire Tomorrow, which is focused on making sure children and families have access to education, healthcare, and career pathways to ensure every family member thrives. To learn more about New Hampshire Charitable Foundation and all their initiatives, go to www.nhcf.org. This podcast was also brought to you by Family Support New Hampshire. Family Support New Hampshire is NH's coalition of family resource centers and family strengthening programs that exist to ensure Granite State families have access to resources so both caregivers and children can succeed, because supported families are strong families. To find a family resource center near you, visit www.fsnh.org.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Nathan Fink.
I'm Jasmine.
Thank you so much. It feels like I haven't seen you in forever.
I know, huh?
But I don't know if that's just because these days it's like the pace of life.
Is it the time change?
Oh,
that really
gosh.
Got me. That
yeah,
really got me this time around. I didn't think it would, but it did.
Yeah, it felt like that was like a jet lag. And I know you and I just talked about this in the elevator. There's so much happening right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it feels like spring is really jumping into summer. Like, it's really getting ready to jump into summer.
Yeah. And, you know, I think part of that feeling or that speed is, I feel like right now, especially for me, it's all reaction, in that life is coming at me and I'm reacting rather than having some sort of intentionality behind things. Is that happening to you?
Yeah, all the time. I feel like sometimes I'm trying to catch my breath. Like, by the time I finish something, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe. And then we're starting the next thing before I know it. And I'm like, all right, I just caught my breath for like 5 seconds, let me start the next thing.
Yeah.
And it's just fast.
It's so fast.
Yeah. I feel like there's not enough hours in the day.
Yeah. And then it becomes like one of those things where, you know, getting outside of yourself as a parent, because obviously the speed leads to stressors and becoming in many ways the parent I don't want to be.
Right.
So, I mean, this might be putting you on the spot, though, because I know angry me as a parent is sassy, a little sarcastic, and can raise his voice.
Yes.
What does angry, stressed Jasmine look like?
Angry, stressed Jasmine looks like lots of yelling, maybe even a little bit of like stressful cleaning. Have you ever done stressful cleaning, like where you're scrubbing
a
counter?
I'm considerably noisier when I stressful clean.
Yes. Yeah. You start to like bang things around and... Oh, man. And then all of a sudden you catch yourself and you're like, whoa, hey.
What's interesting about stressful cleaning to me is that the noisiness wants to signal to people with
that
ears.
That you're irritated. Yeah.
Right. But like, to do what? You know, they come in, they're like, can I help you? And you're like, how dare you ask?
Yes, exactly. Like, I've already gotten this done.
The interesting thing, I think, well, actually, the concerning thing for me, though, is in these moments, when I step back, I'm actually starting to notice this also imprinted on my children, especially my oldest son, which is, and this has been happening, I think, most in times where he's experienced some sort of like trauma. I want to say light trauma, because I'm not talking trauma, big T, but I'm saying like an injury, his brother hits him in the face with a ball.
Yes.
And I look over and I see like literally his pupils narrow. And take a breath, his nostrils flare, and something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Like they get into that lizard brain. And it's incredible how they react in that way. And then I take a step back and I say, well, I kind of did the same thing. Now, how in the world? Do you notice this?
Oh, 100%. Especially when one wants what the other has.
Right.
It's like there is no thinking before grabbing. It's just grab. And then all of a sudden you hear the screaming and people are crying and there's nobody calming down. And you're like, holy moly, how am I going to calm this situation down? Because then you have to think about like, I need to calm myself down first.
Right.
Because sometimes even in those moments where they're they might be arguing or going at it, like you might be really stressed already at a high level. And then you're coming into a supercharged situation between the two of them where they're at their highest level. And then everybody's just so altered. And how do you like take a step back and take a breath?
You were angry cleaning.
Literally.
Yeah. So let me ask you, like, when you go in there, what does the non-intentional Jasmine do, like, look like when you go into those moments stressed?
It's usually like physical separation. I'm like, all right, time to physically separate, you know, and I'm moving people to where they need to be so that at some point or another, there's some sort of level of quiet. Because I don't know about you, but when I need to think, I need some sort of like level of not quietness. It doesn't have to be completely quiet, but at least at an audible level where I can communicate, because I need to think about what I'm going to say next before then. But usually it's a stressful separation. Like, no, you be over here and you be over there. And I need to take a moment and come back and like, you know, think about how I'm going to address this. And sometimes even in those moments, I'll use big words that they don't understand. And I realize like, they can't break that down. They can't break that. They might not even know the language that I'm using. Right. And so it's one of those moments where the angry me is like, okay, I need to take a step back. And I, you know, we're talking about solutions, right? When it comes to those angry moments.
Yeah.
I recently learned that if you whisper something like as if it is a secret, they will calm down naturally because they're trying to hear what you're saying.
Right.
So that means that they have to be quiet.
That's actually funny that you say that. I've heard of coaching strategies in the NFL where certain coaches lower their voice so people lean in.
Yes.
And then there's an intensity there without it being intense.
Exactly.
So that's interesting.
And that's something that I've been practicing recently because I'm so used to like, I'm loud. Naturally, I'm loud. My laughter is loud. And when you think of me angry, think of angry loud. You know what I mean? And so I noticed between you and my two kids, right, is like their reactions to each other are super loud. And I was like, how do we bring down the audible level? And you know what? And naturally, it helped me calm down because I had to lower my voice and think about how I was reacting.
Yeah.
And so I started whispering and I'll tell you what, it does bring at least the noise level down. And so I've been using that strategy to be able to show them that if they could stop and think and then decide, then that'll hopefully help them when it comes to those explosive moments.
That's really interesting because one, it starts with you. I think that acknowledgement, and this is where I'm trying to really reevaluate the way I approach these situations. Also give myself some grace because I will always go back to Loretta Brady on this one, where the idea of rupture and repair. Yes. I will rupture.
Yeah.
And that is part of my humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But that repair or that beat, I think, is so important. And I've been thinking about now when I actually rupture unintentionally versus intentionally and what that's causing. And by that, I mean, when my son's face glazes over, his pupils narrow, he's about to do some damage on his little brother who accident, right? Five-year-old, he's an eight-year-old. There's different expectations for
the age groups. Yeah.
For the age group. And what I noticed is I'm trying to get his attention to pierce that veil. And I would liken it to right before a shark bites, you know how his eyes roll back?
Yes.
So I'm trying to break through that. But the way that I break through that, I think, is really important because he has ADHD and stimulus can be triggering.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to clap, but that's not a loud, explosive noise, right? Or when I shout, I'm actually trying to raise myself above the din of their own arguing.
Right.
But that's perpetuating that as an approach.
And even when you think about the ADHD brain, think about how loud stimulus actually triggers for more stimulus and movement in your body, because your body has to regulate. So when you're thinking about like yelling and and trying to get your point across in that moment, you're just not going to, because their brain is at an altered state that you can't reach.
Yeah, it's not there. And so, and then for me, then I mean, this is hyper reflective, which is good. That's what this podcast, that's what the podcast is for. But, and this might sound obvious, it occurred to me that this is why we teach and instill values in our children, not for the moments that they're present,
right?
For the moments when they're not present,
right? And the, and here's the thing, is that like recognizing that they will rupture, and that they, that it is okay to be angry, and that it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to have those feelings, to teach them the values of how to react when they do feel those feelings, and they're going to have those moments, and those are the moments that you got to take the time to be like, here is that value. This is where we apply that value.
Right.
And you hope, your hope is that they keep and continue to apply those values when you're not around.
And when we come back, we welcome Shannon Deslitz. Don't go anywhere.
Today's show was brought to you by Bank of New Hampshire. For 193 years, Bank of New Hampshire has put customers and communities first. With the expertise to help you realize your goals, their technology makes banking easier, and the friendly faces will make you want to visit in person. Want a bank that has your back? Bank of New Hampshire are your people. For more information, visit bnh.bank or call 1-800-832-0912. Member FDIC.
Today's show was also brought to you by Burgu Media, a full-service media company dedicated to helping nonprofits realize impact stories for print, video, social, and legacy media, and more. Both budget-conscious and grant-friendly, Burgu Media helps your organization celebrate the humans in human services. Learn more at burgumedia.com.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. Today on the show, I'm thrilled to be joined by New Hampshire's DHHS Community Wellness Administrator and leader of the Choose Love Movement of New Hampshire, Shannon Deslitz. Shannon, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. I know when you got here, you said, is this a podcast? But, you know, this might even be a better conversation because it's more off, you know, kind of off the cuff.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, to know about Choose Love Movement and its tremendous impact, you have to start with Jesse. How does this all start with a little boy in Connecticut?
So Jesse was 6 years old inside his first grade classroom. How I came to know Jesse and his mom, Scarlett Lewis, the founder of Choose Love, is my other hat as I provide post-trauma therapy. Mm. And I've been providing post-trauma therapy for now over 11 years, which I can't believe I'm saying that number. I was just down there a couple weekends ago, so the need doesn't go away. But that is how I was first introduced to Jesse. Scarlett came to me from day one of being down there providing therapy and shared with me her story. So Jesse was a six-year-old inside his classroom, and his teacher had just been shot, and he didn't want to leave her side. And in an instant where the gun either jammed or the gunman went to reload the gun, in that second, he yelled to classmates to run. 9 of them did, are alive today. They're in their senior year of high school, and they credit Jesse for saving their life. And, you know, he showed a tremendous amount of courage. Hopefully none of us listening to this podcast ever have to show that amount of courage that he did at just 6 years old. Mm. But in that moment, you know, he chose to help his classmates. He chose love. Scarlett returned home a few days after the tragedy and was stopped in her tracks on a kitchen chalkboard that she hadn't noticed prior. She was a single mom of two boys working long hours, but she was stopped in her tracks. She went home to gather clothes for his funeral, and she stopped by seeing on this chalkboard in his little six-year-old phonetically spelled handwriting the words nurturing, healing love. Mm. And she knew right away that had the shooter been able to give and receive nurturing, healing love, this wouldn't have happened. But she wanted to know more. So she reached out to a doctoral professor by the name of Chris Cook. He's the author of The Compassionate Achiever. And she said, you know, you with your knowledge, what does this mean to you? And he researched it. And those three words that Jesse left were across every culture's definition of compassion. So Jesse truly laid the groundwork for the Choose Love movement. And that is how it was born. And she was given the title of her first book, talking about her journey, called Nurturing Healing Love.
Yeah.
It started with Jesse.
I can't imagine having to be in the position of the caregiver coming across that, nor having to make, you know, what Choose Love calls a heroic choice. Help me understand this idea of heroic choice.
So in the Choose Love movement, we talk about that choice moment model and making a heroic choice. It's having the wherewithal to pause and think about our response using part of the Choose Love formula. So the Choose Love formula is broken up into courage, gratitude, forgiveness, compassion, action. And for our Choose Love in schools, you know, the units are broken up into four quarters that coincide with that. But a heroic choice is, you know, something, a stimulus happens, something happens to us. Are we going to respond reactively and what we call kind of flipping our lid, which we've all done? Mm-hmm. I've caught myself even driving, getting aggravated with people. We're all works in progress. Or are we going to pause and think about that Choose Love formula and choose how we were going to respond? It is always a choice. And as far as that thoughtful pause, now operating out of fight or flight mode, people might be in their amygdala, And instantaneously might react versus that pause. So we learn skills and tools to bring us into more emotionally regulated state.
How do you go about teaching young children something like that from a programmatic standpoint?
Yeah. So actually, we talk about it being difficult for children. I find it's more difficult for adults. Kids actually get it.
Yeah.
We bring in neuroscience. We bring in neuroscience into the curriculum. So when kids understand how our brains work, they then understand reactions better and our behaviors. And we actually take them through a little hand model where, you know, I know you can't see it's a podcast, but we talk about flipping our lid. And the kids, once they understand that, they then understand emotional states and behaviors and reactions.
Well, you had just said something really interesting, which is what I didn't think about, but you're right. I think I need more of this learning than my child does. So what is it about then adults that makes this trickier?
You know, I think a simplified version to say it is just we've had more years of being human, And things, we are all human and things do happen and we all have stories and layers that bring us to the present moment. So depending on what our past might look like, we might be more easily triggered, for instance. But with that said, going to the success of Choose Love for Corrections, for instance, working with adults who are incarcerated and hearing their testimony and their feedback, it is never too late to touch someone and change how we approach situations. And some of the biggest feedback I've heard is, Shannon, that, you know, I've noticed now when something used to tick me off, I used to react. And now I'm noticing I'm pausing and I'm not anymore.
So, and you had just mentioned, you know, with corrections, some of the impacts. What are some of the other or more specific stories that you can recall?
So I have yet to leave one of our correctional facilities without tears in my eyes because it is so powerful and you see the fruits of the labor right before you. And, you know, in addition to that thoughtful pause, they're able to self-reflect. They're able to realize that we do have a choice. And perhaps their upbringing, they were never taught that. Even people who are lifers who are not getting out, they're still finding purpose now in how they're reflecting inward and in their own self-awareness, but then modeling for their own children or perhaps helping people navigating the system coming in. It is peer facilitated. So some are peer facilitators and they're able to help others. I've also been reached out by a spouse of someone incarcerated. And she's like, I don't know if you've heard from family members, but I just need you to know that I'm noticing such a positive difference in my husband and how he's engaging with the kids and the questions he's asking them. And this has evolved in such a beautiful way. So the next phase of the program is to build a coinciding program for families or loved ones to do at home to help with that engagement piece, help with common language. But then also if their loved ones are going to return home, to help with that reintegration piece to hopefully prevent from returning.
Yeah. So talk to me about the idea of reward playing into this. So then to guide us to those better choices.
Sure. So we talk about a dose, D-O-S-E of nurturing, healing, love. And that dose stands for dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. So these are, Choose Love stimulates these four neurotransmitters known as the happiness quartet. So dopamine is like a reward center, So it's linked to feelings of pleasure, reward, motivation. Oxytocin, of course, is one of those feel-good hormones linked to bonding, feelings of empathy, love, trust. Serotonin is the mood stabilizer. So helping to regulate anxiety, reduce depression, maintain overall mood balance, contributing to feelings of well-being and happiness. And then endorphins. endorphins, often referred to as the body's natural painkiller. So helping to alleviate pain and enhance our mood, they help to reduce stress and anxiety. So those four things, just the act of choosing love promotes feelings of happiness, reward, and well-being.
Right. So if you get that then in repeated doses, you're going to see that behavior is going to follow that.
Absolutely. And I've heard from those incarcerated too, like, look, choosing love feels good. Anger, hatred, resentment, the only thing I've known my whole life feels bad. And it can be brought down to that simplistic term, yeah. Right?
I mean, this quite literally was my discussion with my two sons. Somebody always hits somebody else either in the face or a place they'd rather not be hit. And you can see the choice moment in their eyes. He is believing that whatever he's about to do is going to satisfy some other release in him. So how do you practically break through those moments where you can kind of reach in beyond that reaction?
You know, I think it start with conversation with them. Like, did this just happen? Did you feel you flip your lid? Or, you know, in taking them through the hand model that we have online, there's Choose Love for Schools, there's Choose Love for Homes at no cost, by the way. But even in talking through that, you know, there's emotion is very real.
Yeah.
Our feelings are very real. And I think first validating that and then saying, you know, talking through the situation, what would have been another alternative here, another, you know, and how did that make you feel, by the way, responding that way and then talking about how it make the other person feel. I'll never forget when I first brought this to New Hampshire back in 2018, my son heard a presentation by Scarlett for the first time. And he himself said, wow, you know, imagine if we as his generation had had this all along the way through school. This high school would be a different scene right now, right? So embedding it early, you're helping and you're giving them the skills and tools to not react in those situations, to learn an alternative path, to learn how to choose love in different situations. And it becomes part of the norm. And I think us as adults, we didn't necessarily have that along the way.
I was going to say, you know? I was envious of his, if he at that time is probably like 18 or 19 saying, I wish our generation had it. I'm like, what about our generation?
Yeah, it's so true. So I have been outreached by a lot more early childhood centers. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, also a lot more middle and high schools and after school programs that serve all ages. The elementary schools were usually the quickest to jump on board with this, but now it's starting even earlier because there's a lot of emotional and various behaviors that are being seen even at younger ages. And then our high schools, for instance, they're struggling. You know, I'm working, for instance, with the chief of police at UNH because he's like, Shannon, these kids aren't ready. He refers to it as 13th grade. They don't necessarily have the skills and tools to navigate this. And he's seeing the results of that, you know, responding to 5 suicidal ideations a week, for instance. So there's a great need. And sometimes it's just getting back to the basics.
I mean, it's amazing to me, but I'm curious about you now as on your journey. Mm. How are you as a human watching this impact, processing all of it?
Great question. Thank you. So I will do everything in my power to bring this forward in our state. I've seen the other side of it, right? I still see it. Working with a community in Newtown, Sandy Hook, Connecticut. I don't want anybody here to suffer. So my heart and soul's in this. I'm pouring myself in this. But I believe we're all here to help one another, right? And this is such an essential part. So as I said, you know, how am I processing and witnessing this? It's brought tears to my eyes on many occasions because the fruits of your labor, you know. And recently, for instance, didn't think I was going to go here in the podcast. There was an anti-SEL bill.
Right.
So social emotional learning, which is what Choose Love would be considered an SEL program. It's character, social, emotional development. But this bill would have taken away programming such as Choose Love, as well as suicide prevention programs. And it was hard for me, being so passionate about this, to not be able to testify, right? Because I am with DHHS now. But I sat back and I had no idea so many people were coming in to testify. And all throughout the testimonies, you hear Choose Love, Choose Love, Choose Love.
Certainly in the process of bringing this forward in New Hampshire, you must have been able to witness changes to yourself.
I'm so glad you asked this question. This recently came up. It's specifically in working with Department of Corrections. You leave a changed person, seeing the impact in other human beings. And I think sometimes we all just need to see the light of humanity in other people's eyes. But then also seeing the impact of whether I'm in Department of Corrections or I'm in an elementary school or working with high schoolers and seeing the impact and hearing how it's impacted them and changed them and help their emotional well-being and how they can handle conflicts, how they can handle challenges.
Yeah.
I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
It feels to me like no matter the circumstance, when you reduce it at the very center, we want very similar things in our journeys.
No matter who we are, no matter our ages, no matter our background, we're all the same in the need to love, be loved, and have authentic connection.
Well, Shannon, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
This podcast was brought to you by Nixon Peabody, who delivers exceptional legal services for clients in the community by combining high performance, an entrepreneurial spirit, deep engagement, and an unwavering commitment to a culture of collaboration, diversity, and humanity. Nixon Peabody works with universities, hospitals, and nonprofits of every size to maximize impact. For more information, visit nixonpeabody.com.
Many thanks to the Samuel P. Hunt Foundation for sponsoring this podcast. Established in 1951, Samuel P. Hunt Foundation is a Manchester-based, independent nonprofit that provides grants primarily for the arts, children and youth services, faith-based organizations, educational institutions, healthcare, and human services. New Hampshire Family Now is listed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and more. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or ask your smart speaker to play New Hampshire Family Now.